All right, our next speaker is Dr. Christine Morgan. She will speak on agronomic management strategies in Texas, securing soil and improving the efficiency of water use.
Okay, well, good morning. So I think I was asked to give this presentation to kind of give a soil science perspective on ecosystems and ecosystem services. And so first of all, I want to thank my co-authors because they're the ones that actually provided all of the data for this talk. So my co-authors are agronomists, soil scientists, and crop physiologists from the different research centers in Texas, primarily in drier systems where water is definitely the main limiting factor to biomass production. So it's Jordan Bell, Paul DeLon, Zhizhen Dong, Katie Lewis, and Jamie Foster. So we're going to take a waltz across Texas today in ecosystems. But since I'm a soil scientist, you're certainly going to get a soil science perspective on this. And my perspective is probably very shaped right now by this concept of soil security, which looks at soils from five dimensions. So traditionally, soil scientists have worked a lot in capability and condition, essentially what can the soil do and what condition is the soil in to perform whatever service that we require of it. But also, just as important in soil science, we need to think about the capital, what is soil worth, the connectivity between our soil science knowledge and agronomists, plant physiologists, land managers, and, of course, society at large, and as well the codification about how policy drives how we manage our soil and how we plan to manage our soil in the future. So this concept of soil security was really developed to start encourage and help soil science broaden their perspective on how we manage and look at and understand our science. So since we are talking in ecosystem services, I went and did my homework on a few ecosystem services. So essentially an ecosystem service are benefits that people derive from ecosystems. But primarily it is under the context that it supports human well-being. And I think that's kind of quite important when we start looking at our management practices. And the ecosystem services that are defined by the European Union when it comes to soil, biomass production, something we're all very familiar with, filtering nutrients, biodiversity, the cultural environment, very important, and of course the carbon pool and heritage. And one of the things that I thought about this morning when Alex was talking about, he wasn't sure of what the, he felt like Americans knew the Farm Bill and our farm policy the best, but, a lot of farm policy, no matter what country you're from, is not just about biomass production, but it is about this cultural environment, and very much our farm policy in West Texas promotes the rural cultural environment, so that has value as well, and we shouldn't forget about these things when we're trying to evaluate cropping systems. So, again, we need to value our ecosystem services. Specifically, when we're talking about soil, we need to think about soil as an economic asset. And in that scope, when we think of soil as a natural capital, it has to be defined in the context of humans and human well-being. So soil doesn't directly contribute to human well-being. It's really based on the human capital, the fact that we're here and we have needs. Our built capital, our economies, our infrastructure, and the social capital, which is how we interact. And soil value is filtered through these things to human well-being. And that's kind of important to understand when we start thinking again about holistically cropping systems and what their worth is. So if you just look at generally what the value of soil and agronomic systems are, I highlighted this is just a table from Costanza, 1997, just gives some values to ecosystem services. So I looked at these ecosystem services, and I've just highlighted some that I think are relevant to cropping systems. Water regulation, erosion control, nutrient cycling, food production, genetic resources, and again, cultural services. And if you take some of these values and add them up, is the total annual value of soil ecosystem services, about $11 trillion. And if you just add up the ones that I highlighted that were very agronomic centric, you're still at, it rounds up to $11 trillion. So if you really think about these ecosystem services for cropping systems, it's quite a large component of what we can put numbers to for the value of soil. And of course, $11 trillion doesn't mean much to me because I know what it takes for me to live in a month, but $11 trillion is a lot. So we just looked up some other values here. The U.S. gross domestic product is $17 trillion, and the world GDP is about $77, just to give reference. But the interesting thing is if you look at commodities alone, they're very small compared to the ecosystem services of soil. And I think, again, I look at those values, you know, this, they're all less than, they add up to less than $1 trillion. And so my point here is that when we start looking at our ecosystem services, one challenge that I have to agronomists and soil scientists and plant physiologists and entomologists is to really think about, we're changing a system and that has costs that might be more difficult or more challenging, but we also need to better recognize what values these changes provide, and it's more than just what the crop is worth. And we all know that, but we don't always necessarily make faithful attempts to quantify that. So I started thinking, what is the value of a cropping system, with soils being a component of that? And our management strategies that we have in Texas that I'm going to cover today are converting conventional till to no-till and strip, adding in cover crops, and managed deficit irrigation. So for the managed deficit irrigation, it means different things in different locations, but primarily what it means is that you don't just deficit irrigate straight across the line. You deficit irrigate, and then you might irrigate a little bit more at key physiological stages, and perhaps get more water use efficiency than you would just from plain deficit irrigation. So these are management strategies that we have in Texas, particularly in the drier parts of Texas. And then how do we assess these strategies, right? Biomass production, you always see those graphs, so I'll show a few of those today. Water cycling, and again, this is an important ecosystem service, right? Infiltration, storage, availability of the water to the crop. And it's really interesting in Texas now because we're having a lot of weather patterns, and we're having flash droughts, and we're having flash floods. Just recently in Austin, they got 14 inches of rain, which is over half their annual total in 3 hours. And that is becoming more the norm than, you know, Texas, we never actually have average weather. It's extreme, but our extremes are becoming more clear. And this year, we have our average annual rainfall is above average, but we received no rain in the summer. So we're experiencing what we call, we had a really wet spring, which we, and then a quick drought, a flash drought. And ecologists and ecohydrologists are showing that flash droughts are actually way more destructive than, you know, a long-term drought. So water cycling is huge. Carbon cycling, we all talk about that. Biodiversity, sometimes there's consideration of that depending on the agronomist, but risk abatement. You know, when we talk about changing a cropping system, we show, well, we didn't affect the biomass, so that's good, but you still have to convince someone to put in a lot of extra time and effort for this different cropping system with no increase in yield. So it's really important that we get better at quantifying the resilience of a cropping system, or what I would call the risk abatement of a cropping system. So you might change what you do, and maybe long-term average, you're going to be getting about the same yield, but you're also more risk-averse to flash droughts and extreme flooding events. So where is our waltz going to go today? It's going to go up into the Panhandle, down west through La Mesa. We still call that West Texas, far West Texas, we won't go into, and then down to Uvalde and Beeville. And to give you an idea, these are all fairly semi-arid conditions, but the soils vary dramatically, and also so does the climate. So in different, you know, up north, it's important to keep the soil warm. Down south, maybe you want it warm up quickly so you can get an early crop in, but There's just different things to consider, and we have vertisols and sandy soils at these different locations. But we're going to start in Amarillo, and this is some work by Jordan Bell. And she looked at management deficit irrigation in Amarillo and in sorghum. So as I explained before, that red line, a fraction of full irrigation, the red line represents deficit irrigation, and the blue line represents managed deficit irrigation. So I think you got that idea. And so what happens, on the y-axis, we have water use efficiency for 3 years, and we're looking at sorghum. And essentially what we find with deficit irrigation, some years it's about the same as full and managed deficit irrigation, but the three-year trend, of course, is full irrigation has the highest water use efficiency, but only in 2012 does managed deficit irrigation get slightly outcompeted by full irrigation. So essentially this is saying that if water ends up having a value more than just creating yield, maybe for consumers or, you know, city people that live in towns, that there are strategies to cope with that resource. If we move down to Uvalde, they also have done some managed deficit irrigation. This is a busy slide, but it just shows we're in a, this is a cropping system on a pivot irrigation. And essentially we have different tillage and deficit, managed deficit irrigation strategies. And this is an 8-year study, primarily corn, cotton, but more recently there have been a lot more horticultural crops moved into this. And this is Yuzhen's work, and some, I think, Diane Roland's work. But Uvalde cropping system here for 8 years. We're animated, so we'll move along. On the y-axis on the top, we have yield, and underneath water use efficiency for corn. So if you just look at the top, the general trend is there's not a huge difference in corn yields. And if you look at the water use efficiency, there's really no difference at all. When you start looking at 100% irrigation, 70% managed deficit irrigation versus deficit irrigation. So, and then, again, there's also no significant difference between conventional till and strip tillage, other than if you look at the nuances, strip tillage tends to outperform in the yield. So in this situation, we've shown that we can reduce the water, maintain water use efficiency, and then also we can even improve our yields with strip tillage. And then Zhejun has gone into the field, measured infiltration and bulk density, where he finds a different story, that the soil actually is more compacted under strip tillage, and also the infiltration has been decreased. But these are fairly high clay, silty clay loam soils. So in Uvalde, down south, in fairly high clay soils and warmer climate, strip tillage was associated with yield increases. Soil surface cover under strip tillage tended to attenuate surface temperatures, so that was probably helpful and inhibited soil evaporation. But however, there were both decreases in bulk density and infiltration. So if we go to La Mesa, before we go there, we're heading back up north to more extreme, hotter summers and sandier soils. And this is some work that Paul DeLon had put together, looking at global meta-analysis of no-till versus conventional till in organic carbon, because increasing carbon is a big component. And essentially, globally, there tends to be a general trend with increasing carbon and maybe stratification of carbon with depth when you go to no-till. In Central Texas and Oklahoma, there's very little evidence that going to no-till actually increases organic carbon in the soil. With that being said, if we look at La Mesa, we can see that there's a little bit of an increase in soil organic carbon with tillage. But if you look at the infiltration, which is the water capture ecosystem service, we see that no-till is doing a better job at capturing rainfall, which is very important in La Mesa. In Chillicothe and Vernon, again, we don't see a huge difference in organic carbon capture with conventional till, strip till, no-till, and no-till of the cover crop. However, again, when you look at the ecosystem service of water capture, no-till with the cover crop tends to really increase the soil's ability to function to capture rainfall and irrigation. The same thing we see in Haskell, Texas, which is a little further north of Vernon. Again, no significant change in organic carbon, though there is numerically more in no-till. But we are getting more infiltration. same in Collingsworth, which I didn't look up, but I think it's somewhere around there, that we're getting more infiltration. So the story here that Paul Zalon has shown, that sometimes there's more organic carbon, sometimes not, but the water capture function of soil is enhanced by strip tillage and cover crops. And same thing in Swisher, very little change in carbon with different tillages, but there are significant changes in infiltration with tillage. Okay, so that Paul says you can't build up carbon levels overnight. In general, there's greater infiltration with conservation tillage. Nutrient stratification is not so evident in long-term no-till systems in this part of Texas, and they're continuing long-term studies to study these dynamics. And so now if we go to back to Beeville and look at the effect of cover crops in no-till, Jamie Foster has a project there to evaluate whether integrated strip tillage and cool season legume cover cropping can be as productive as conventional till. And they show that you lose a little the year you establish, but after that you can meet your target crop yields. Moisture, which is a big concern with cover crops, didn't seem to be affected, so that was positive. And again, if you look at bulk density, we're getting back into those same soils that are near Uvalde. We are having higher bulk densities in no-till. We haven't done infiltration studies. Those are going to be done in the spring. But also, when we're doing no-till treatment over 5 years, there's not a lot of significant difference. Here, the green is no-till, and the yellow is cotton yield, and conventional till. So again, you can see that risk abatement issue going on with no-till. I think there was a replant problem in 2013. And same story with sorghum, that there's a risk abatement component here, and that's, I think, my big story for today, is that you move around in soils and environment. We can see that managed deficit irrigation has promise in increasing or maintaining water use efficiency. No-till and strip-till can increase organic matter sometimes, but they definitely seem to more consistently improve infiltration, mostly. But I think the big take-home message here is we're not putting value in our resilience of cropping systems. We talk about it, we show the graphs, but you know the reason why I showed the dollar signs associated with soil ecosystem services, I think that we could start thinking about what are the dollar signs associated with these cropping systems. Because I just don't think, if we just show that they're as good as conventional till in biomass production, that we're not going to change a lot of minds very quickly. And it gets back to the connectivity issue, is connecting in dollar signs for those that actually have to do some of the work. So thank you, and I wanted to go ahead and advertise that we're having a Global Soil Security Symposium in Paris in June. And if you're more interested in evaluating ecosystem services and cropping systems and soils, that it'd be a good place to discuss ideas and results.
In Paul's study of carbon, the infiltration differences that he showed, mm-hmm. Do you know when those were collected? And like at what point during the season and cropping cycle?
I don't know.
Okay.
I know. I know he did it twice, but he measured it and then he measured it again just for antecedent moisture, but I don't know what time of year he did it. Interesting thing I think about that is that he was seeing these changes in infiltration but not changes in carbon, which is always the big talk when we move to these different cropping systems. And Paul's actually speaking twice on that at these meetings, so if you want to catch him, his talks are 181-4 and 344-9. Thank you.